Jy is ingeskakel op Understanding Autism. Jy is op 100.5 FM. En by ons in die atelier vandag verwelkom ons vir Sharon Neider. Baie welkom.
Baie dankie.
We want to talk about specifically different learning styles and study methods today. Is this a bit of your speciality?
Yes. During the 25 years that I have been working, 20 of those years, actually 20 plus of those years, I focused in a lot on learning styles, how people take information in, how they process it, and how they get it to paper. Yeah.
So how do you know what kind of learning style you have? Because this is not specific to children with special needs or even adults with special needs or with on the autism spectrum. It is every individual has different learning styles.
Yes, that's definitely correct. I think I grew up in a family where I had a very interesting home environment. I was one of five children, and I had a very analytical father who was a chartered accountant, and I had a very flexible mother. She was very organized, but she had no problem in allowing each of us to study in the style that best suited us. So that was my primary my primary exposure to learning methods. So I had a very kinetic sister who would, while she was reading, she would be chewing ice or knitting. And then when she was processing the information, she'd be going and hitting a tennis ball against a wall, which to most people would look like a strange way to be learning, but she was a straight-A student. And so from that exposure and seeing that my mom had no problem with me writing all over my wall with pieces of paper and chatting it through, I realized that there were huge differences even within my own home environment. So that was what prompted me to want to study and find out more to see how everyone processed information and learned differently.
And you and your sister arrived separately on your own, though, at what worked for you.
Yes, definitely. And as I say, I'm one of five, and each of us studied, or my one brother didn't study. We all got to the same end point of having learned information.
So what are the most common categories of learning styles?
Well, it's all about how do we receive information and how do we process information. And so what I've done over the 20 years is I've refined a process by which I look at receptive preferences and processing. So most of us have either got a combination or a definite preference for either concrete or abstract receiving of information. That means some that have to first do before they learn, and others that have to first look and experience before they, yeah. So we have different, those that do and those that first observe and then think and then do.
Can you give us an example with maybe math?
Well, I could give you an example with little children, because often moms would first have perceived it in their little ones. So it'll be, Johnny, don't do it. Johnny, don't do it. Oops, Johnny did it. So that would be your concrete learner. He needed to experience it first. But then there would be Timmy, who was watching Johnny and thought, I don't want to get sore, so let him do it, and I'm learning, and now I'm seeing how I should do it. So it would be those that watch and those that do.
So you get kinetic, is that movement?
Yes. So those come more in how, so there's sort of an umbrella preference where we've got our concrete learners that I've described and our abstract learners. And then from there, we sequence information differently while we are busy processing. You get people that first are very random, so that they organize information in chunks. They don't need to do all the steps. They take bits of information and make huge steps in processing, so they process lots of information at the same time. And then you get sequential learners who learn it step by step and cannot miss one step. They have to do it one step at a time. And so your randoms, it would be like a pinball machine. Or, you know, so you see lights going on in no specific order. It can be very frustrating for a sequential because they can't understand how can this child possibly be learning. So that's especially maths teachers who want children to do all the steps, and they see a child skipping steps, and then they get to the right answer, but they can't figure out how they got there. So those are totally different approaches, but both ultimately can reach the same goal. And then after that, we have ways that we would want to receive information, say, in the classroom, which would be either through our eyes. And so some children want to first see it. Some children want to hear it. Some want a combination of seeing and hearing. And then after that, they either want to look at whole picture. Some children want to first see the big picture. Some want the details to build their picture. So even in the classroom environment, some want the sequence, some want the meaning. So even in that environment, regardless of how they process it, there's preferences, and then they go home, and then it's all about having to learn it in such a way to be able to give it to a teacher at the end in a test set by the teacher. So learning is a complex process. We think go home and learn, but there, you know, in it all, their preferences, and again, the bias is again to get it into the format of the teacher who may have set a test that the child never has been prepared for. So learning is quite complex, and it's judged at the end by a result that the child might not be equipped for. For an example, I'm working with a mommy at the moment on a farm. So I go and do sessions with her on the farm. And she thought her little boy just couldn't learn because his results were so, she was battling with his results. But now I've tested him and I've seen he's a concrete random. That means he learns by first experiencing, but his organization looks very haphazard. And he was kept doing badly on tests because he was having to sit at his computer and work in that environment. We picked up that his preference was an active preference for processing information. So I have gone and done learning sessions with him so that she can see how quickly he can learn, and then she can apply it through with the rest of his learning, because she was under the impression that learning needed to happen in the same way every time. And she said his last results were phenomenal because of the fact that he learned nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs. He was busy with homonyms, homophones, but we were busy playing while we were doing it. And she was just watching us. And this past week, we were looking at electricity. We were looking at circuits. We were looking at weather. We were looking at how electricity strikes, how we are then conductors if we happen to be in a place where it can't get to the ground. And in all of that learning, you could just see the strides and the chunks of information coming together. And this little boy then goes to apply his skills by creating a circuit on his bicycle to have a light for when he rides around the farm. So it's fascinating to watch an active child in action, literally, because their learning is so incredible to watch, and the general knowledge is unbelievable. But this would be a child who would fail in a traditional learning system, but when his specific method is applied, he can actually achieve.
How do you know which style of learning you yourself even are?
I think you very soon know if you are random or sequential based on your preference for learning. So you would know if you were bored in class if the teacher kept going over all the steps and if you liked to skip steps. Most people can instantly actually connect with either of those two. And most people will know, do I prefer to see what I, to experience, to touch, to taste? Would I prefer to get it in a concrete way? Would I want to use my senses and my body as my primary receiver of information? Or would I prefer to hear it explained in an expert way? So if you are wanting to use, to take it in via your senses, you might order it either randomly skipping steps or sequentially with all the steps. So your concrete sequentials would be your very good managers. They would be hardworking, conventional, accurate, stable, dependable, consistent, factual, and organized. Whereas your concrete random would look very different. They would be quick, intuitive, curious, realistic, creative, innovative, instinctive, and adventurous. So you can see, although they're both concrete and want to take it in via their senses, the organization makes all the difference in how the outcome looks. Your concrete sequential would match very well with the teacher's style of teaching, because most teachers, and I've tested many teachers, I would say in the Lowveld, I've tested the staff, I won't mention the schools, of three different schools, and I did it to help them to understand their learners. The predominant style that I have found in teachers is concrete sequential. They work well with syllabus and they stick to routines and are very organized, which works very well within a schooling system. And the children that are most often picked up as having learning difficulties would fall in the concrete random category, because they're your out-the-box learners. They're the ones who test rules, who ask why, and are quite tricky to teach because they're skipping steps and are just not quite as conventional. But then when you come within the abstract groups, they're also very different. So you have children who learn by observing and seeing. You get your abstract randoms, who are your people. So the abstracts often refer to more a person focus. Your concretes are more task-focused, and your abstract randoms are your very caring people. They're sensitive, compassionate, perceptive, imaginative, idealistic, sentimental, spontaneous, and flexible. Very kind. Those are your peacemakers. And then your abstract sequentials will be your children who do very well in academic pursuits, very detailed. They are analytical and objective, knowledgeable, thorough, structured, logical, deliberate, and systematic. You can see each person has their place in society, but some are more representative of those that would end up being identified as having learning difficulty, and it would fall much more on the random side. Children that the teachers perceive as not being able to follow steps and to fit into the traditional box.
So the challenge is accommodating these children. Is there a solution, or is this where the parents come in to do it at home?
It is tricky. I think if teachers have understanding of the difference in learning styles and that a learning difference is not necessarily a learning problem, the children with the highest IQs that I've ever worked with, and these are children that literally have untestable IQs, have also fallen within the random category. But the teachers had thought they had learning problems because their methods were so strange. So at times it's about understanding each other and that we are all different. I understand that the learning system, we have to get through a syllabus. So it is tricky. But I think at times maybe allowing some of the learners to work together if they're groups, and facilitating the process. And then there are a lot of online resources on how to best stimulate the children.
Is something like a home school or a teacher center perhaps a solution?
I don't necessarily think so, because I think although the school system is more geared towards sequential learners, the tertiary environment is much more accepting of learning differences. And I think if children all learn to understand each other, it is a far better. So for sequential learners to understand that, wow, there are other ways of doing it, and for random learners to understand, oh, wow, that sequence really works. So I think it's more about understanding that we all need each other, because that's how life works.
Right. So we've talked about the receiving, we've talked about the processing, and now there is the...
So we have basically the way that we would prefer to receive it. It's a little bit like making a smoothie. The classroom would be the ingredients. So that would be your berries, your yogurt, your ice, your powder, or whatever you would prefer to put in. Okay. Sometimes we don't receive ingredients, so we need to get them ourselves, if you can understand it. So you might end up with berries, but no fluid. Say your eyes did not receive what they needed. If you were a visual learner, you would have to go and look at it at home. Okay. From there, the child has now received or hasn't received what they need, and then they need to go home, which is, you know, so now it would be the making of the smoothie in the processor. In a classroom environment, ideally we would receive everything we need. Then we would go home and we would process the information so that we would be able to give it again. And that's pretty much how the brain works too, is that learning happens in the hippocampus. So the first exposure to learning would be that we would store it in our short-term memory. And then from there, it would be allocated to the areas in the cortex that we need it. And hopefully we hit the bullseye and we actually get it to stay there. But it's actually in taking it out and using it again that learning happens that can be used over a lifetime. So I hope I'm making it understandable. The learning environment would be where you get your ingredients, but then you have to process it. And then the end point would be pouring it, the knowledge you've received, in a way that you can receive the marks in a test.
Or get a certain outcome.
Yes, or an outcome or an understanding. Yeah, something that you could take to paper, which started in a different form.
How important is it for parents to figure out what their children need and support them?
Oh, very important. Yeah, and from my own home environment, I learned that best, is having a mother who was open to various learning styles. I mean, I've had dads who've said, how much will it take to fix my child? I'll pay whatever it takes, because they saw their preferences being broken, that they were broken and needed to be fixed, specifically if a child is very random. The parents would prefer that they are better suited to most learning environments, which would be a sequential processing. So supporting your child and giving them what they need. And I must say, the Lowfield parents are incredibly supportive on the whole, the ones that I have worked with, but they're already coming to me. So if I say a whiteboard would be a great place for your child to start. They are auditory in their preference, but they combine visual and activity. It would work. Then most of them would be willing to try it out to see if there's a good outcome. So, but definitely trying to understand your child and seeing what works for them. If they need more visual, there's so much of visual available these days on the internet. It's fantastic. So,
okay, so you get visual.
Yes.
You get kinetic movement. You get auditory.
Auditory.
You need to hear someone explain to you.
Yes. So some people prefer to see it. Some people prefer to hear it. Others prefer to use their whole body, very tricky bunch. Others have a preference for reading and writing. And that would be a more traditional approach, and that is the approach most people would think everyone should use, because ultimately the end point is reading and writing again. But some learners have that as a very low preference. And so it's tricky, because everything until they write their exam has not happened on paper.
And then the outcome is not very good.
Sometimes is hampered by that.
Can it be daunting for parents that they need to make a lot of input at home? Do they sometimes have to kind of redo the lessons?
From scratch, yes. At the beginning, especially with our younger children. So, for example, say a child has their kinesthetic preference is very, very high. So when they're learning letters at school, and it goes from... Okay, so we call it vertical horizontal transcription. So the child is having to look at a flat two-dimensional image and take it down to a flat two-dimensional image using a tool. That might be a very big jump for a child who's played in a sandpit and done hopscotch, and teachers have been busy with clay in a nursery school, grade R, grade that type of environment. So they've been there, they've been encouraged to explore materials. And then there's a huge jump from a grade R year into a grade 1 year, where they're going to the small tool, and that most of the day is spent using a small tool and working in very flat and colorless planes from a very colorful environment. So there, it might be useful for the parents to use sand for the child to work in, or clay, or Play-Doh. But I know time is limited. So sometimes a whiteboard marker on a fridge would be the next best. So if you don't have a whiteboard, you can use a fridge, because it wipes off very nicely, those whiteboard markers. So my daughter, for example, learned her spelling words on the fridge.
How does this pertain to children on the autism spectrum?
Well, every child so far that I've worked with on the spectrum, and I haven't worked with all of them, so I can only speak from the point of view of my experience, has had a primary concrete preference for the receiving of information. So they learn best by actually being physically involved with the learning process. But I must say, there is a total difference. Some prefer sequential ordering, and it's very obvious. They like their steps to stay the same every day. Same wake-up routine, and if it's disrupted, it disrupts their entire day. Others have a very random preference, and it's also obvious even in the way they choose to dress and how they feel. So you can normally pick it up. Our biggest problem, though, with children on the spectrum is that the very thing that they use, which is their senses, is also where their sensitivities lie. And so every day feels different for them. So some days they're feeling modulated. If you look in the Lowfell Tower, weather changes from day to day. Yesterday was cold. Today is hot. So straight away, my skin feels different. The way I feel my skin, the thing I usually can rely on, feels different. So today, I might not want to learn because my preference is not feeling great, my concrete preference for receiving information. Or maybe the sky is so bright because it's cloudy today. Why is the sky so white? And why is it hurting my eyes? Which is my preference for receiving information, is my eyes. I like to see things. So today I'm shutting down, thank you very much, because my eyes are feeling very sensitive. So within the preference can lie the problem, because sensitivity means that certain days we work optimally because everything feels right and my body feels right and my senses feel right, and other days it can be a totally different outcome. And if we understand that, we allow each other space to...
Encouragement. Correct. Is it important to... Okay, I know you're struggling. It's okay. We'll try again tomorrow.
Yes. I think one of the benefits that I have found, given that I've worked so long and I've raised my own children in the process, is the ability to see the big picture. So you will sometimes find parents that are very focused in on today's marks and yesterday's marks and this term's marks. And at times for myself, I've seen the process with my own children that it's about getting them to a place over a period. And so you encourage them towards smaller goals and then bigger goals, so that ultimately it's not about today's test. If you fail at today's test, there's going to be tomorrow's test and we can keep working at this. And ultimately, yeah, so that it's from grade one to matric. When you see it as a whole spectrum, the ultimate mark is, of course, the matric and grade 11 results. And it's about getting our children, it's like running a marathon, encouraging them all the way to reach the point where they can make the decisions for the future. And in special needs, that can be very, very different too, because like where is the future for them? So it's all about building blocks, whether children are in traditional stream or special, in inverted commas, stream. It's about them being happy and fulfilled adults. So the pressure we put on them can either make or break them for a lifetime. And ultimately, I'm always the most happy when a child comes to me and they say, "I'm clever." Especially if I see that actually that child has got so many more learning difficulties than they should at that moment, but if their confidence is intact, that child can do anything. And that is when I praise the parents the most, is thank you that your child has no understanding that they are having more difficulty than their friend at this stage, because confidence is everything. And if parents can keep on showing their children that they believe in them, regardless of whether they top 10 or top 20, that's not the most important thing. It's to have I raised a happy, healthy, kind child who is accepting of people that are different to themselves. And then, of course, we want them to open the doors, and that's what ultimately our grade 11, 12 is about, having the keys to open the doors for the future. And we all want that for our children. So it's about enabling and encouraging them towards that goal.
Ons gesels met Sharon Nader, sy is 'n arbeidsterapeut in die Laagveld. En dit was Understanding Autism op 100.5 FM. Volgende week maak ons weer so.